Hello and welcome back to our podcast, where a fanfic of a fanfic that itself is a synthesis of Fallout, a popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. I'm Fi, joined again with my co-host, Weird. Didn't screw up anything this time.
Yes, except for my name, which the official title is Sir Weirdington Esquire.
Yes, Sir Weirdington Esquire. He is a very haughty jukebox, don't you know? So yay, hi, hey, we're back again, we made it. We're not dead yet, and I'm going to keep saying that. I'm excited about this episode because it's the last episode where I have to do two chapters before the end of the volume. The next episode will probably be something of a recap of stuff we've seen so far, probably discussing some of the themes we've established up to this point, and also obviously a breakdown of the chapter of chapter 16. For now, we're just going to get through these first two chapters, but before that, Weird, what did we learn last week?
Oh no. All kinds of... plenty of things that I would just assume forget, honestly. Let's see, I'm trying to remember where it started. I remember well enough the second half, the second chapter we did. Wait, oh, okay, so I think we start off with the, like, cute... comedy of the, like, sort of Team Rocket style bounty hunter that comes after.
Yeah, we're greeted with Virgo Zodiac.
It's an adorable, like, you know, sort of comedy of errors thing. What's less adorable though is the dragon shades were a casualty of the encounter. Unthinkable monster. After that, something to do with a train? Oh, wait, Blackjack runs back into... What was that movie where Will Smith played a caddy?
Oh, Christ.
Pony Bagger Vance. Zebra Green Mile.
Zebra Morgan Freeman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Zebra Lady Morgan Freeman. Zebra mid-career... Whoopi Goldberg.
The joke is here is she's comically the magical black person trope, given that zebras are kind of black coded, and then on top of that, she just dispenses wisdom and doesn't really add anything else to the story, which is a bummer because she's a really fun character otherwise.
Yeah, Whoopi.
Yeah.
Henceforth,
she is Whoopi Goldberg.
So Whoopi meets back up with Blackjack. And fills her in on what happened, like where her memory like disappears. And wouldn't you know it, yet another memory orb. Except this one was empty, so it took her memories? I think that's how she acquired the amnesia? Anyway, so there was some irrelevant fights in a train. In order to save the day, they wound up going on separate tracks.
Yes.
With Blackjack unconscious. And so Blackjack now has a sense of where her two compatriots like wound up and starts heading that way. And then not a highlight of the actual text, but a highlight of our show. We yell about horse masturbation for a little bit.
Yes, yes we did.
And then I'm actually really kicking myself. Like, the thing that I'm not super excited to talk about again is, like, my failure from last episode, because it suddenly, over the course of this past week, in between episodes, it suddenly occurred to me, oh, wait, up to this point, Fi's been mentioning that, like, in hindsight, he's realized that a lot of the, like, bickering interaction between P21 and Blackjack has been sort of, like, Moonstruck has been like cheers, will they, won't they, like flirting, which is, which in light of what I'm about to say, almost literally made me throw up. like it's just every time I think about it, I kind of get vertigo. So, Blackjack was the first, took P-21's virginity when he was still P-1 while he was crying. And not only was she indifferent, she was annoyed.
We're going to get into it more in these next two chapters. Don't understand what Sombra was going for with this character assassination. But anyways, sorry. Press on.
Kind of makes me, like, pretty disinterested in Blackjack's, like, future as a person. And in fact, like, retroactively rooting for, like, P-21 to, like, kick her skull in while she's asleep. Especially because I've been warned that, like, mild spoiler, apparently their past relationship gets worse. And on top of it all, like, for you it was the most important day of your life, but for me, a small town fascist cop, it was Tuesday.
That's what we're getting to.
Right, so that then she moves on from that to, like, oh, but she's super regretful about it, you guys. She's super, like, sad about that in double hindsight. Like, she didn't have enough hindsight to, like, be having the slightest awareness of, like, that she did it. But now that, like, she's reminded that she did it, and, like, she's been exposed to P-21 as, like, a person for, like, an unknown number of weeks or months. I have no idea what the time scale on the adventures up to this point are. Now she, like, kind of cares. Anyway, she makes her way up to this airbase, and I don't know if is it an intentional booby trap? Is it a literal intended exposition mine that she steps on?
Yeah, it was an intentional exposition mine. This is a cruel trick that Sombra played both on Blackjack and on me personally.
Well, no, it's a cruel trick on the part of the Hooftwaffen, who are apparently camped inside the hangar in front of her. I don't know how that managed to skip me by, like, last episode. Because I made a joke about, like, hypothetically, what if somebody used one of these memory orbs to, like, record, like, 2 hours of, like, nothing to trap people in. And I guess this is the same. Like, what was even in it? Like, more flashbacks from, like...
Yeah, of Macintosh's Marauders. Yeah.
Sergeant Macintosh and his Howling Commandos.
Yeah, there we go. There's the reference.
It was a reference I was fumbling with last week, but this is a great redemption. We're bringing it all together, as it should have always been.
Yep, all our midweek material is coming out in our tight five here.
Right. So Dr. Professor MD PhMD is there waiting for her. And the recurring theme is, hey, we're all super obviously, like, evil wing Nazis. Wing Nazi horses. Gloria, Dr. Professor Scientist, PhD, can comment on all the evil? Oh, no, you're just projecting.
You're just being silly. like Gloria, they wear black uniforms and kill people. Yeah, I know, but, like, give them a chance. They could be the good guys.
So they raid, so they team up all the same. Blackjack helps the Hooftwaffen kill and harvest some raider brains, and collect some food, which Blackjack, you know, earned, but is not allowed to have because it's now property of the Imperial Hooftwaffen. Come back to base. The dumbest, like, most annoying Saturday morning cartoon / melodrama cliche of protagonist rounds a corner, sees something preposterously incriminating. The bad guys are using previously established, like, voice mockery powers to frame Dr. Professor Scientist PhMD, and then they knock Blackjack out by shooting her with bullets. The ultimate antiseptic. But she's been hit with enough low caliber rounds now that she's built up a tolerance.
Bullets just make her sleepy now.
Yeah. And she wakes up and immediately fails to tell Dr. Professor Scientist what she saw, leading to Dr. Professor Scientist eventually being officially framed because she has too much hope and wasn't on board enough with what turns out to have been a plan to infect literally every single ground horse with the raider plague to turn them into ravaging lunatic animals, thus making them, I guess, easier, both materially and in terms of justification to slaughter in their entirety. So the Hufwaffen, it's no longer just a joke. It is, no, they're literally ethno-purists. The core goal of the main government is
genocide.
Yeah. And yet, the only reason that Dr. Professor Scientist PhD is no longer on board is because she's literally been forced out.
Yeah, she's been chemically burned and branded as a traitor to the Enclave. That's where she is right now.
Which made me sad that, in the original story, what we could be having instead is, an anti-fascist cowboy. That's something to sort of dwell on, sort of imagine on the horizon.
In the other story, this character was played by a cool, ANCOM cowboy.
So Redneck Strangelove is now no longer with the Conclave, because she doesn't have any choice otherwise. Blackjack uses mind bullets to not immediately escape, weirdly. Just, what does she demand in exchange for, not shooting her guards with mind bullets? She acquires, some concession from them instead of just escaping outright.
She shoots one with mind bullets and then, just threatens the other one to, I'll murder you if you don't. I'll murder you in the same grisly way if you don't let me out, was the thing. And she steals their stuff, and then she takes a bunch of drugs and hulks out and busts through an observation.
Oh, okay. All right. I remembered it completely wrong. Anyway, she goes on a crazy fucking combat steroid coke bender and wakes up with Gloria, with the two of them. She's beginning to crash, and they're, on the outside of the hangar. And around this time, she uses, it somehow occurs to her to use this random large silver bullet she found with the atrocity gun she found in Trottenheimer's, office. And another thing that I failed to, comment on last week is the atrocity gun is a massive letdown and deeply, infuriating on multiple levels. One, it doesn't do much atrocity when fired. It's just a BFG. It makes a helicopter disappear. Sure.
Ta-da.
Why is this, Trottenheimer's lament? Why is this sort of Shiva? I don't get it. And the other thing is that, okay, this is a unique weapon. And, one of the bullets for this unique, ultimate weapon is just, debris inside this, Nazi military base.
It was hidden in Trottenheimer's workstation at the building, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
it's junk that was just there, basically. No one found it, but
given the build up and the sort of significance of this is the final legacy of a pony named Trottenheimer, you would expect it to only be fired once and at the end of the story and make a building disappear, in some way be a regretful, terrible mistake to have employed.
Yes.
Instead of, okay, well, a helicopter is gone. Okay.
Ta-da!
Took out a high XP enemy, I guess. Sure.
She leveled up again, so at least there's that.
Great. Yeah, and so that's all I recall. They're now on the road again.
Well, you managed to cover pretty much everything.
With the Hufwaffen kind of in disarray behind them.
Yeah.
but now looming as a threat to for consideration in the future.
Yes, a would-be bad guy for later storylines. So,
I guess one last thing worth of note is what is his name? Daisy Hooves?
Light Hooves.
Light Hooves, right. Is the main bad guy from Inglourious Basterds, basically. So good on them. I suspect this fiction predates Inglourious Basterds.
I believe so.
But like good on Somber for utilizing a fun sort of smiling Nazi
yes.
trope.
Anywho, I guess it's time for me to talk about perks. That we earned from last week.
Right. What did we earn this time?
So chapter 12 is a little bit boring. She gains the perk finesse, which just makes her like in game it makes her crit better, I guess, which is another one of those gaming abstractions that kind of doesn't really make any sense or add anything to the story. But whatever. And in chapter 13 she gains the sniper perk because of shooting something with a sniper rifle or the Trottenheimer's Folly or whatever, and she gains another point of telebullets, which allows her to shoot even better with her bullets. She gets more psychic bullets.
Okay.
It's now a 2x per day spell instead of a 1x per day spell. I'm not joking. That's actually what it is.
Goddamn, you're a meshy. Yeah, I mean, like, it's like, no, we're going to deviate from the text. Let's be totally irrational in order to have fun with it. No, this is a deep. This has deep story implications. It implies that she is now closer to becoming internally a gun.
She really is. This whole story is about how Blackjack becomes a gun. it is. That's the theme of the story.
No, I'm just imagining the. A sort of 1920s-esque double title, like Project Horizons, or How Blackjack Became a Gun.
Yes, that's what this is. That's Fallout Equestria, How Blackjack Became a Gun. Anywho, moving on to chapter 14, our text for the week. Chapter 14, Strength.
That was a good 20 minutes, but there was a lot to look back on.
There's a lot to break down for these next few chapters. So we open up on BJ trying to cope with the trauma of what's happened over the last couple, like the last chapters. She does that thing where she puts all of the blame of the things that happened to Glory on herself again because she is a martyr in every way, all the time, no matter what.
I mean, hey, actually, in fairness, this time, totally earned it.
She totally earned it.
I mean, again, it's by virtue of really shitty writing, but like, you could have mentioned that, hey, they're going to frame you. Mm-hmm. You could have said something. There was a thing you could have done.
You could have tried. Like, she makes mentions of, like, oh, maybe they're not on the level, but she doesn't have any evidence, which isn't true. Like, that's the worst part.
Yeah.
She just casually forgot because she's an idiot whenever Somber needs her to be.
Does she now remember that she had evidence in hindsight in order to kick herself about it? Like, is that the deal?
Like, she realizes it at the very end of the chapter. Like, when the confession happens, she's like, oh, that guy that has vocal recording powers, like, he must have done it.
That guy with vocal recording powers that I caught doing it did the thing, maybe. Huh.
Yeah, we open up with BJ taking a shower in the cleaned-out airport. Like, the whole airport has been completely, like, the Enclave have completely removed their presence there. It's all on, like, emergency power again. It's basically back to being, like, just another place on the wasteland. But apparently the shower still works, so that's cool. So yeah, BJ takes a shower to get cleaned up. As she's happening it, because she can't help but dwell on the events that have happened up to this point, she has another major panic attack. And this time, she decides that the only way to deal with it is to start medicating with painkillers. Oh boy. We get to start this arc of the story.
Well, I mean, the sexy man meat who is always right about everything, and apparently, it turns out, deeply personally traumatized by her, said that like you shouldn't express or contemplate your negative thoughts. So, I mean, she's just relying on the advice of a trusted friend there.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong, actually.
But the story is.
Yes, the story is wrong.
So, at this point, I'm reminded of... I don't know if you, Fi, or any of the audience out there, dear precious audience, I do love you, have watched the Netflix Iron Man show. Or not, Iron Fist. Netflix Iron Fist. So in the first 10 minutes, unlike with the previous Marvel Netflix series, wherein the first 10 minutes do what a first 10 minutes of a show should do, which, like, encourages you to really care about this character and, like, want to know more about them and become invested in their struggles. The first 10 minutes of Iron Fist does the opposite of that. It like, really teaches you all the reasons you should, like, hate Danny Rand as a grotesque little shit. And at the almost at the exact 10-minute mark is the perfect thesis statement for how much of a piece of garbage Danny Rand is and how much you really shouldn't care. Danny Rand has, like, a Hallmark original movie quality flashback of his parents dying on a plane, and he begins hyperventilating, freaking out. But then he catches himself and says, "I'm okay. I'm fine. I'm okay." Like, he turns and, like, as though to, like, directly and specifically reassure the security guard he beat up earlier, who's escorting him out of the building, that he's okay. And the security guard says, "I don't give a shit." And as an audience, my immediate response is, "You're right! I don't either!" That's kind of how I feel about Blackjack right now. That was a long anecdote to get here, but I felt the context was needed.
Yeah,
Yeah, pill yourself to death, Blackjack.
Yeah, yeah, BJ gets very hard to care about because a lot of her, like, misery is meant to be, like, a stark... sad contrast to anytime she has any sort of victory, and it's meant to, like, make there seem like there's emotional consequences to a lot of her actions, but, like, again, framing is a problem with a lot of this stuff, and the context of it is also, like, often just like, hey, there's either nothing you could do about this, or you could have done something, but, like, the story just decided you weren't going to.
Yeah, no, that, like, all of your mistakes are fundamentally the direct interference of a cruel and capricious god. Like,
yes. An evil little shit. But
like, in either case, like in the case of, like, a total lack of sympathy, like, taking on face value that, like, she is as bad as she says, which might be true, yeah, pill yourself to death. Or, okay, well, you're cursed to inhabit a world controlled by, like, a capricious demiurge who is going to force arbitrary, like, failure and emotional pain on you at every turn, in which case, pill yourself to death. Like,
what else can
care
you
about
do?
You? Like, I really think that the best thing for you to do is pill yourself to death. You poor sad horse.
It's important to note that we're not advocating for that in real life.
No actual person should, because as much as you might feel it, none of you are under the sway of, like, none of you are being written by Somber. there is a way out for you.
Take some solace in knowing that no matter how bad you are, you can't possibly be Blackjack. That's kind of how I am. That's how I feel. Anyways, we kind of need to move on. We're like half an hour in, and I've gotten through a paragraph. Anyways, she leaves Glory to sort of cry herself in the showers. BJ decides to, after medicating with painkillers, decides to drown herself in a bottle of vodka.
Oh, that's a... that's a historically ideal combo. Like, that's recommended by 100 doctors out of 100.
And that was the end of my story. I took pills and alcohol and never really got to see the end of this. But anyways, we skip to the next scene, and she wakes up in a pool of her own cold vomit, and feeling the hangover, decides to try and clear her head by scavenging. She gets two more memory orbs. God damn it. She reads some mail from some generals. It's not really important. We get some more pictures of more military families, and she's like, huh, it's weird how they're, like, just, like, she notices the gender weirdness in comparison to her own stable again. BJ and Glory have a heart-to-heart over salvaging some systems, because it was part of one of the quests they were doing. Glory makes some small talk and asks about BJ's father, which BJ just doesn't know how to respond to, because she's like, she reveals that, like, fathers are kind of like a make-believe thing as far as she's, like, came to understand them. Like, there was something that happened in fiction stories, but, like, her context for it is a particular breeder that you're really sweet on, that would be your parent or whatever, like that would be that person's spouse, which is like, I guess, like, Somber can read our minds, because I was complaining about this problem literally a chapter ago, but and now just addresses it. It's still bullshit that, like, this is the first instances of it. Like, it's not compounded with her also being really weird and yucky about males. Like, she always takes every male character as if they were, like, valuable, and even despite being raised in a society to think the contrary wise. So this is still not good writing. It's just, like, it's... But at least there's, like, a lampshade on it or whatever. Good job, I guess. BJ gets mad shook, remembering the events of the stable and her role in it. Decides to wander the area again by herself. She comes back to that prison from the previous chapter where she tortures someone via radar, and starts having a freak out. She hallucinates that weird skeletal horse again, from a couple chapters ago. You still there, Weird?
Yeah, no. I'm listening. I'm thinking of a moment to chime in. The only thing I could think of was desperately trying to recall the name of the, like, sort of skeletal, like, flagship villain of Deadlands. But, there's just not a lot to say. Like, okay, so she takes a shower. What if anything, is Dr. Professor doing?
She's kind of just moving around in a fugue state. Like, she's moving completely on autopilot because she's actually genuinely traumatized by the events. That, like, whatever, she's a fash pony, but, like, she, like, regardless of her interaction, she's, like, she just kind of gets fucked over for basically no reason besides political gain, which is fucked up. Like, Glory gets punished basically for no reason all the time in the story, and this is just kind of, like, another point of it. And I think it's just because she's the optimist of the group, so she constantly has to be, like, beaten down by the endless weight of nihilism that the story presents.
Yeah, I mean, so Jasper Stone, not a reference that anybody is going to get, so won't even make the joke. I've been silent because there hasn't, as far as I can tell, you haven't told me anything yet. Like, the yeah, story no, hasn't told us anything yet.
I know. I like nothing really happens in this chapter again. Like that keeps happening. There's a lot of push and pull chapters. Like, there's a lot of, like, chapter where bad thing happens, and then chapter where the characters, like, try to emotionally cope with it, and then chapter where bad thing happens, and this sort of becomes a recurring trend until a number of chapters in, when, like, BJ kind of gets out of this tailspin that she's going into slowly. But regardless, she sees the skeleton horseman, and BJ's revealed that she's basically completely checked out at this point. She's now like, okay, I don't care if I die. I just want to make sure that Glory and 21 are alive. She's pinning her entire emotional baggage on the survival of her two idiots that barely contribute to anything besides making her feel sad. The skeleton starts talking back at her, though, this time. It really just serves to mock her a bit. Boy, do I not like this character when we get reveals for it later on, because, like...
Okay, let me recap. So far, Blackjack takes a shower and goes to bed on a belly full of
pills and alcohol,
circles back to, like, the fast installation to, like, take a look at that jail where she tortured someone with a zombie that one time, and then a skeleton makes fun of her.
Yes, and then a skeleton made fun of her.
This is a bad story.
This is a bad story.
Why are we doing this? This seems like a bad idea. This seems like a terrible mistake. I think it potentially might be.
Yeah, this is a big, big mistake. That's why we end that's why we end every episode this way. Christ, we'll get into the juicy bits in a second, but we got to get to this slog. This is the big slog. Like, boy, BJ and Glory leave the facility. Blah 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 blah. Glory now can't fly because she's traumatized, and she also refuses to drop her loyalty to the Enclave as a whole. But she's still sort of somewhat affected by it and gets moody about it. This is the first time we get the line that BJ is broken.
Screw you, Strangelove.
Yeah, screw you, Strangelove. I believe in America. I just don't believe in the people that are corrupting America. Regardless. Okay, we skip on. they're down the road again. They get to the strip mall from the Rock Crusher like mine episode, where the main branch of the gang that they were helping out moves in, which are much, much surlier and evil. They fight them for a while, and BJ is like, yay, I get to fight people without having complicated feelings about it, which is not a good framing, but she immediately has PTSD flashbacks to all of the other things that's happened so far, takes more drugs to calm herself down during the fight. We get through that section, which was largely irrelevant. BJ starts to come down from the meds. Glory admits that she feels BJ is smarter than her. BJ fucking loses it on that and starts externalizing a lot of her baggage, citing that it was just pure dumb luck and minimalizing like all of her gut feelings, basically, that the Enclave was bad. Glory
her
talks
gut
about
feelings and direct sensory
evidence, sensory. Yeah, and direct evidence with her eyeballs. Yeah. Well, it makes a point about the gut feelings. That's the part that matters, I guess, here. But she basically just goes, like, I'm an idiot, and I was just lucky.
Somebody with, like, Sombra's, like, well-established super reactionary politics, like, is all about putting gut feeling at a point of preference in decision-making. No shit, really? I'm super shocked.
We're got a lot more of this to go. Okay. Mostly this is just BJ and Glory being like becoming each other's baggage for the scene. BJ almost blabs about being horrible and stable because like Glory trips a sensitive word for her by calling her a good person. But she chickens out at the last second because of course she does. We need to make this reveal tasty drama until it finally gets revealed. So instead they get shot up by some sort of sniper and they can't pin down who they are. So they bail into a rock formation which contains another stable in it. I don't know what to even really talk about the stable because I think what I'm about to get into is an interesting concept but like adds virtually nothing to the story. It's an aside story that's just kind of like, oh, this would have been cool. And like I could easily have seen this being one of the stables like in a vault in Fallout, probably because it kind of is. But anyways, they go into Stable 90, and when they get inside it, they find out that the door is kind of only being held up by, like, bolts, as opposed to, like, the complex mechanical systems that usually keep the stables closed. And when they go inside, they find out that, like, all the technology had been completely gutted out of it. It's basically just a skeleton of what a vault is supposed to look like on the inside. They get into the Overmare's office, and, like, this... Like, I don't even, like... Like, I kind of just want to talk about this because I think it's an interesting idea, but it adds nothing to the story. But they read a doomsday log that finds out that, like, P90 was, like, an unfinished vault that was cleared for being finished. So a bunch of people were, when the bombs fell, a bunch of people got inside and the door got closed behind them. And then they just died. Like, they just ran out of food and water and they all went, like, they all just died. Right. It's only interesting in my opinion because like it's not because of a test that the stable was doing. Like this was just pure bureaucratic bullshit. Like funds got moved out of this stable because something else was getting made, and I'll get to talk about that later on. How the story tries to redeem the character that did this, which is Golden Hooves. Of course, it's fucking Golden Hooves, and I think Somber forgot about this scene. I think he forgot that the reason why a bunch of money got moved into this really important thing happened because it killed a bunch of people and we were supposed to be affected by that. So, like, how am I supposed to forgive that character if this is the consequence of that money shuffling that got done? It's almost an interesting point about how, like, the idea that, like, money getting moved around, like money being siphoned out of something that was critical for the survival of people happens constantly. Like, hospitals and schools are defunded all the time.
Something indifference to inequity. Something ends justify the means.
It almost says something, but then it just turns around and just spits in its eye. Like, it's a disappointing plot point because it doesn't... It serves nothing but to justify it because, like, the world-saving super device that kind of fixes the plot is revealed to have required the funds that killed these people. Like, it's a disgusting... And it's not even... That's something that just Somber added to the story because he needed to make it more complicated. It doesn't... it ruins, like, the main plot to do this.
Something, something, disavowal.
Yeah, we can only say disavowal so many times, I guess, before we hit our quota. They decide to get some rest in the stable because no one's willing to come into the stables beside them because apparently people consider them haunted or something. I don't know, there's not really an explanation to why the sniper doesn't follow them and just don't. BJ doesn't, can't sleep because her heartbeat is reading too fast because she's on so many drugs right now that, like, her body can't calm down. So she decides to, like...
Speaking of crippling guilt, like, hey, Dr. Scientist, MD, PhD, there's an MD part of there, and you're letting your patient just take handfuls of pills.
Well, no, she, like, so BJ's been sneaking them, like Glory hasn't seen her do it up to this point, because it does make a point about this in the next chapter, but yeah, it isn't just Glory being, like, negligent, she just literally just know that BJ's doing this.
No.
So, because she can't keep an eye on her 100% of the time.
Nope.
Like, this is one of the times where, like, actually, no.
Nope.
Even Somber knows this, like, is kind of too fucked up.
Has Somber ever, like, met a medical professional? Like.
Yeah.
No. like.
Probably not. She should have, like, took it one look at him and was like, yeah, your eyes are dilating and you're, like, twitching constantly and, like, you can't seem to settle down. Have you been, like, taking, like, a lot of drugs, or maybe you're very, very sick?
Not even the question, just, like a sigh and a condescending stare, and an insistence that you, like, stop taking my pill. Stop taking all the drugs you're on. I'm not on any drugs. You're very on a lot of drugs.
You're very on a lot of drugs. You're on every drug.
Yeah, no, like... Hey, how about a character who's actually, like, seriously dropping the ball here? But yeah. But again, like, let's not... I actually sort of chided myself here, like, again, let's not, like, get caught up in a goddamn, like, Thermian fallacy. Like, this is, like, you know, all of these things happen because Somber wills them to happen. Like... Let us not like shit on the medical qualifications of a fictional horse. Let us turn our eyes to
who is just doing her best, frankly. But yeah, anyways, BJ just starts having more arguments with Skella Horse. He implies he's the goddamn Grim Reaper, and he sort of mythologizes his role in the story. This would be the worst thing ever if I didn't know that none of this was real. Like, this whole Grim Reaper storyline goes in some really stupid, terrible ways, but thankfully it's not like, oh no, Blackjack is actually possessed by the literal goddamn Grim Reaper, because that would have been the shark jump to end all shark jumps. But, like, no, it's a different shark jump.
Okay,
but yeah,
continues to be made fun of by a skeleton. The skeleton is also a liar.
Yes, skeleton is also a liar. BJ
all this
insists
skeleton
that she...
hype. Okay.
You can do it, skeleton.
No,
but
you
yeah.
can't fool me, skeleton.
I'm onto your skeleton games. Oh, man.
I'm onto your shenanigans. Huh? Huh? Your shins have bones in them.
We gotta make our own comedy here, folks. There's no laughs to be had here. But BJ insists again that she's not an executioner, drawing the line between, like, killing when I have to and not killing people out of, like, just, I don't know, murderous intent or whatever. I don't know how she defines executioner here, but it's
well, wait a minute. Isn't that precisely what she, like, was super hype about, like, a second ago? That, like, oh, we've run into some raiders that, like...
Yes. We're gonna talk about how there's a part in one of her backstory audio clips, which is... not this one, but it's the next one coming up that we're about to get into, that kind of makes me question everything I had ever assumed about BJ, because I don't think Somber understands the implications of his own writing on the character.
Of course not.
But
that would require self-examination. That would require a degree of self-awareness and self-critique. That,
and clarity of purpose, yeah.
That our author has firmly eschewed.
But anyways, she decides to listen to the next audio recording in the list, We find out that young Blackjack meets 21 again, this time as P13, so he's much older at this point, running away from Daisy because she's trying to kill him for some, because he's not performing his duties correctly as it's framed. She scoffs at damaging stable property, referring to 21, because this is, you know, still evil past Blackjack, and not slightly less evil current Blackjack. 21 mentions the fucked up state of males and that they, like, if they don't perform correctly, they'll be shocked or drugged or beaten until they're coerced into performing correctly. And performing, I'm here, is just using a shorthand for being fucked. Oh, boy. But BJ is totally tone deaf about it. She relates her experiences like, well, hey, we all have it bad and stable. You know, keep a stiff upper lip.
Says the cop.
How is this the hero of our story?
Like, do we get an arc of how she went from this to Mir's sad sack at the beginning
I don't know. I don't understand how that happened. Okay, no, I kind of do, but I also, like, don't. Like, Somber's, like in-universe explanations don't do enough to justify this turn. Like, there seems to be a missing disconnect where she, like, realizes, like, maybe this is actually bad. Like, but her brutality, like, in deference to the story in these parts countermands her, like, her statements about being a bad cop, like an ineffectual cop in earlier parts of the story.
Yeah, she like, in these recordings, she seemed to be doing, like, the job of a cop pretty well. And, like, yeah, but that doesn't even, like, because when we meet her, she's merely, like, indifferent, not content, but, yeah, like, she's presumably just being sort of lazy is her main, like, vice.
Yeah, she's slothful in, like, in the biblical sense, I guess. But she's...
Wherein, like, in her past, like, she's actively, like, profoundly cruel.
I don't understand why there's this character change that happens.
Right. Anyway, so...
I am
a literally perpetually tortured slave. Hey, like... you're not the only one who has a hard time of it. Ugh. Alright, what happens then? After dismissing, like, the complaints of, like... Of a chattel slave.
She has some thoughts on it, which are actually, like, also worrying because I don't understand the point here. So there is a line that gets drawn in the sand by BJ because she says, I could have done something, because the big point is that she literally did the least she could do, and that's what she's upset about in this circumstance. Because she hides 21 because she feels bad for him, but she doesn't actually do anything to fix the situation. And it's this really bizarre line of thinking that, like, is fairly common, I think, in my opinion, of the center right, believing that, like, societal change is a personal burden, and therefore, like, you shouldn't bother trying to change anything at all, because the only way to fix anything would be such a level of radicalization that would actively kill people. Because her only solutions to this aren't to convince other people that maybe this is wrong or rally against against the system. Her only solutions are to just kill the Overmare and then everybody and other else in the chain of command, because it's her only solution. Because it's a contradiction of extremes. Like, because she's written by this kind of chud, like, the only solution to like societal change is, like, summary execution of leaders, which is preposterous. It's incredibly,
and also keeps the system in place.
Yes. Well, yeah, that's the neo-lib way, isn't it?
Like, the system rolls on. Like, like, oh man, this genocide machine is kind of a bummer. Well, what if we just replace the blades in the genocide machine? Like, here's an idea. Like, the turbines in the genocide machine are too slow, leading to excruciating deaths. If we just put in, like, better, faster turbines in the genocide machine, like, it'll do its work much faster.
Yeah, it's a bizarre, like I was so struck by this, like, presentation. Like, it's one of those things that didn't hit me the first time going through this was just the notion that, like, oh, her solutions are just exterminate. Like, that's our only way of fixing the problem, and therefore, because only the most extreme example comes into her head, she feels paralyzed by the end. Like, she just can't do anything. Like, well, either I kill the Overmare or I keep going, or I keep my head in the sand. Like, I don't have. There's no middle option. There's plan C.
If I can't just kill him, then I don't know what to do.
Which, I mean, is kind of consistent with BJ's character of just being a gun. Like, all she knows how to do is murder. It's her sole solution to all problems. But anyways, I put a point here that upon reflection, just doesn't matter. They rummaged through some details. We had a bunch of exposition and backstory. And initially I was going to talk about some of the other ministries, but like, they don't fucking matter. Like, none of this matters, but especially like the exposition of this stuff is just tidbits to fill in somebody who has never read the original story. And
like cares? Us, but we don't care.
Yeah, it just doesn't matter. It adds nothing to the story. Like, knowing, oh yeah, they're the Ministry of Image, which was ran by Rarity. Like, who gives a shit? Like, I don't know. It just doesn't matter.
Yeah, given the, like, weird character assassination involved in all of the other ministries, yeah, I'm not excited to, like,
yeah,
be sad and annoyed about yet another.
The TLDR on it is that the Ministry of Image was actually secretly the destroyer of seditious material, like branch. Like the thing that the main character of 1984 was part of.
Sure.
And also they dabbled in necromancy. But anyways, we're going to move on.
Why not?
They get on the road again. BJ has a tumble because of the drugs. She falls down a long hill and gets pretty banged up. I think she takes more drugs to fix that problem. They end up at some sort of like geovents facility for some reason, where they get shot at by that sniper, which is a laser gun that goes all the way through our armor. So all of that bullet resistance did nothing. Because she didn't account for lasers. She takes more drugs to fix that problem. I just wrote the point, BJ have a drug problem, because I was just so done with this plot point already.
Like, the only route I can see to redeem this incredibly dumb nonsense is to just go full, like, Hunter S. Thompson XP. That, like... I'd be on board if by this point Blackjack is just babbling at a mile a minute.
kinda, actually.
Can't stop here, it's bat country!
Yeah, she's pretty much losing it. Anyways, we close up this particular chapter by them having another gunfight with the sniper and a bunch of other like bounty hunters, and they get overwhelmed and beaten up. And
where are these pills coming from? They've got access to more pills than they've got rations.
Yes. Well, it's all the medication she stole from the Enclave. Like, she stole their entire stock, which apparently was a lot.
Oh, I mean, okay, well.
She has an entire factory.
Video game logic, like, she has, like, a portable, like a bag of holding. Where's all this stuff going? The menu.
Now watch as they eat 4,000 cabbages in under a span of a second. God. Yeah, the abstractions get pretty loopy sometimes. But yeah, anyways, they get knocked over by some of the bounty hunters who take her alive because they don't want to kill her, I guess, but they were willing to shoot her through the chest, whatever. This is really just so they can have a big dumb... Not even a big damn hero moment, because that requires like previously established characters, but like from the dust and the smoke emerges a horse covered head to toe in spiky blades and armor. It has a small conversation with the rest of the bounty hunters, and they're like, it's like, oh yeah, we took care of her, and she's like, well, you're not going away with her. It's like, wait, I thought you said you were coming with us to take the bounty. He's like, oh no, I said I was going with you. I said nothing about taking the bounty. And then she murders the absolute shit out of them. She's that mysterious benefactor from the previous chapter. Ooh, I'll get into her in a few minutes, but like Rampage is a fun character because her dialogue is really fun. Everything to do with her character and backstory is the worst contrived 90s World of Darkness Malkavian bullshit. She is six flavors of 90s crazy. Strapped together.
I don't know. You didn't have to tell me that. Like, I could have just...
Enjoyed her for a while.
No, I could have just continued to imagine, like, them walking in and going, "Be still, my dogs of war. I understand your pain. We've all lost someone we love, but we do it anyway." Lord Humongous, I'm doing a Lord Humongous bit.
No, I gotta... I have to take every point of light and joy away from your life, as this story has from me.
It's a very funny bit, my Lord Humongous bit. Like, it's a...
I thought it was good. We'll get into her some more, but anyways.
I am gravely disappointed. Once again, you made me unleash my loose impersonations of niche genre fiction characters.
So old that no one even remembers who you're talking about. Anyways, look up Mad Max, folks. They're decent sets of films. But anyways, she reveals to Rampage. She's Rampage. She reveals to Blackjack that she's on
orders. They're badly underrated.
Yeah, they are bad. She reveals that she's under orders to protect BJ because Big Daddy, the leader of the Reapers, wants some sort of audience with her and supposed to come with until that ends up happening. So yay, they got Rampage out of their joint to their party. Woohoo. Anyways, boy, that was a long chapter, wasn't it? But we're gonna keep going. We gotta get through this last one before I can finally die.
One final note. It does amuse me that, like, in the world of My Little Pony, everybody has, like, their name from birth on their birth certificate is predictive of the rest of their life.
And yeah, so it's all prescriptive.
A sweet baby Rampage.
Oh, it's so much dumber than that.
Rampage.
Oh, man. I'm not going to spoil it, but it's so much dumber than that. You wish it was as simple as just a prescriptive.
She was such a cutie pie rampaging across the carpet, and she could barely watch his little doodly Rampage.
Hey, just murdering her little stuffed animals like a little precious cinnamon roll. Anyways, yeah, that's chapter 14. So, you know, this is our mid-roll insert consumer crap ad here.
And folks, like, get some pillows. Like, find all the pillows in reach, and, like, I don't advise you, like, spending the energy necessary to build, like, a well-founded fort. Just like, more of a nest. Like, get some, like, soothing liquids in hand.
Yeah, if you have medication you should be taking, remember to take that. If you haven't slept in a while, consider sleeping. Get some exercise.
But do it right, kids. Don't be like Blackjack. Take the prescribed amount and only the prescribed amount.
And not all of the drugs. Get some water. Water's important. People often forget water.
Yeah, just have a chill before we enter the next circle of hell.
Our next leg. Our next hoof of the journey. Anyways, so welcome back. And we're in our next chapter. Chapter 15, Flank. So we open up the story with BJ telling her cutie mark story. Which involves a horrible accident. Her cutie story is about first time she ever learned how to play blackjack. She learned the cards, and while that was happening, one of the other people that she used to be friends with got crushed by a door and died violently. I don't know how those two things are related, but then, like, before she knew it, she had a blackjack cutie mark. I'm going to get real close and stage whisper you, folks. This actually is really important, but I can't spoil the details because it's incredibly fucking stupid. But I can't talk about it for 60 chapters.
So how did you get your cutie mark? Well, I was playing blackjack and what, dude? Like, scored 21, like, several times in a row? Oh, no, I saw somebody get crushed by a door. What? Yeah. What did that have to do with nothing? It was just setting the scene.
So why isn't your cutie mark like an anti-door crushing cutie mark?
Because I was playing blackjack at the time. Weren't you listening, dumbass?
Oh, Christ. We open it back up to the scene, like curtains draw back into the scene of BJ and crew on the road. Something I guess I forgot to establish is that the end of that last chapter was also BJ ODing, kind of, because of all the drugs she's taking. And Rampage apparently knows enough about pharmacology to be able to prevent her from ODing, I guess.
Oh, we needed, okay, okay. I'm not having a fun time. All right. Okay.
Okay, of the party balance that we have here. Okay, she couldn't OD before this point, because narratively, a accredited doctor couldn't handle a situation like that. We needed a serial killer. Only the serial killer has the specific character expertise to handle an OD.
Yes, and not this doctor.
I am so angry.
That he's your best friend.
I am so angry. What do we need her
for? We don't.
Why?
We don't. Glory is irrelevant to the story. That's the secret. That's the secret twist about Glory. She's entirely irrelevant. She's just there to suffer. She's there to suffer and offer an opposing political opinion to Calamity from the original story. She has no relevance.
Glory treats the OD, and then yes. What? The serial killer stares gormlessly, wishing they could do something, but being completely outside their wheelhouse as a killing
machine.
I'm not
a doctor, I'm a serial killer. Why would I know anything about drugs? But anyways, Glory then gives her a lecture on all of the various chem uses that she's been in biting and what they actually do to her, because a lot of this has been BJ being well, my heart's beating too fast, better take this drug that lowers my heart rate. And it's that doesn't do that at all.
That is a technique called speedballing.
Yeah. So that's what BJ's been doing for the last three chapters.
She's a true fucking, long rig truck driver. Took all the meth to stay awake, but the meth made my heart go fast, so I took some sleeping pills, too.
To slow down my heart. To make my heart sleepy.
At least we're dealing with some realism now, because, I was not joking. real-life moron pharmacology.
Yes, this is redneck pharmacology. More and more, BJ is just a redneck weeaboo. But yeah, we learned the big bad one of all of them is Hydra, because Hydra... what it says on the bottle is it repairs limbs and fixes his damage to the body, but that sort of isn't how it works. It's basically the equivalent of stapling a bullet wound together and hoping it's good. With a staple gun, not a medical staple.
With a name like Hydra, I was half expecting. Wow, you've been using this an awful lot. I guess that explains the clone fetus that is growing in your rib cage.
Yeah, I would have liked it a bit more if it was basically you have minor tumors now because of all the stuff you've been taking. But anyways, we get a bunch of dialogue between them and Rampage, because Rampage is now carting BJ because she's too physically unable. Rampage basically fills us in on a lot of other details that I'm just not going to bother even bringing up because it doesn't matter. But she's an exposition gap. But she's actually fairly fun. She's a decently penned character because she's just if you ignore the I'm crazy aspect of her character, which isn't really evident in this current part, she's kind of just fun. She's very snappy in her dialogue and she offers a lot of different opinions and things. She's still kind of a monster, but in that fun monster kind of way and not horrible monster kind of way, like Blackjack. But yeah, I have mixed feelings on Rampage, basically, is my point.
I mean, that seems like the best we can hope for.
We haven't gotten to my favorite character yet. They'll be in a few chapters, but I don't know how I'm going to feel about them on the second reading. So we'll have to get to that. They make it to the town of Flank, which was formerly known as Flankfurt, and they covered up the Furt because, that way it's the town of Ass. This is where Caprice and her drug peddling operation is. It's a bunch of oral world buildings that are kind of structured together that are still held up pretty decently, whether people have turned into a small town. BJ gets ran through an E-field, enervation being one of the in-universe kind of radiations that fuck up people. Apparently interacts really, really badly with stuff like Hydra. Hydra's stopgap healing technology sort of turns off in the presence of enervation. So old wounds can just open and you can just basically fall apart and die if you get thrown into an E-field too long after being affected by Hydra. They rush her to the doctor, and God, I need to get through this stuff really fast, because a lot of stuff isn't important, but it is also important. It's paradoxical in that way. They run her through an auto dock, which is basically just a miracle device that fixes a bunch of shit, to stop her from her body falling apart. BJ has a bizarre, weird fever dream where she imagines Stable 99 and she imagines her past through Stable 99, but in like a weirdly idealized way where like she remembers the school as being an integrated school with all the males and females being there all happy, and then like an effect of cards sort of shuffles by and like it turns into what actually happened, where like she's mocking like P21 as a small child because he wants to learn, even though like males shouldn't learn in her mind. And this kind of just does this a couple of times where like she keeps trying to imagine what actually like what she sort of want like with like what she remembers with air quotes, and then it actually being replaced by the real memory. And it's kind of a cool like aesthetic scene. I don't know, I'm trying to like find positive things to talk about this story.
And this time I'm not gonna stop you. Like you do. Yeah. No, it sounds well described. It's a well-directed, like, it's a well-framed sort of scene.
Yes. Credits to the cinematographer, I suppose. BJ wakes up from her dumb dream to have a conversation with her doctor, which has a rundown of all the fucked up shit that she's been doing to her body. We find out that her body...
Oh, so Gloria. Her doctor, Gloria.
Yeah,
because they were just running to the clinic because, like, I am
in a fit of pure protest rewriting this thing on
you're right.
Fly.
No, you're right. Glory did do this. Glory was the one who was running.
Okay.
No, it's I'm lying, obviously, but you're right.
All
right,
yeah, okay. All right. Yeah. let's keep it as confusing as fucking possible. So yeah. Glory, her standing physician, like expert, like super genius, you know, PhD, needs to rush her to clinic, pushes the like rube operating the auto dock out of the side to the side and is now explaining the like conditions that they found with the use of the auto dock.
Yes, exactly. So BJ apparently has been affected
because we didn't need to introduce a new character, Somber.
We didn't. No, we didn't. But BJ gets a rundown of her physiology by Glory, and apparently her body's been affected by a chemical in the story called Taint. Taint is like a weird biomedical nightmare that like mutates anything it comes in contact with, and like it does bad stuff to people all the time in the story. So BJ's like heart and lungs and brain have all been affected by it, so there's like an upward amount that she can be physically cured by something like a wonder machine, because it just cannot cure Taint. There's nothing in the story that can cure Taint.
Get us a vat of jade petal tea and or like call in the werewolves. We got some fucking Shadowlands taint on her hands.
Yes.
She's been affected by the worm.
She's been affected by the worm. I'm going to stage whisper this part, but this is the consequence of firing the gun. We don't learn this for several chapters, but one of the things it does is it fucks your body up.
I mean, it just sort of does. Okay.
There's an explanation in the universe, but like it's just, it fills her body with poison. But that's the thing about it. I'm just going to skip this because it no longer matters because of the way we're framing this, but BJ ends up blabbing her backstory to Glory about like being a rape monster in a rape factory. Oh man, this is another one of those character assassination moments, but Glory doesn't take it too hard for some reason.
The Nazi apologist is able to shrug off.
So she relates because she's like, you know, as far as I know, I could have been working on the project that created the Raider disease. And that's right. Like, that's not wrong. But she can't be for sure. Like, she doesn't know because, like, Sombra needs her to not know because she needs to be, like, you know, she needs to be, like, forgivable for being basically a war criminal. Like, Glory is a chemical warfare Nazi, basically. Oh, man. Oh, this story is so fucking dire. Okay, on to page 2 of chapter 15 of 3. BJ spends another treatment session in the auto dock because he's going to take a couple to like clean her all out of all the stuff besides the taint. She decides to get Glory while they're in, when she's in the tank, to play the next recorded file on her pip book that's related to BJ. So the third one in the thing. This is the next thing. So we got a recording of 21 and his lover, who was U20 at the time, but not the U21 from the story. We learned that both of them U20 was the one that like got 21 out of thinking like into being radicalized, basically, about the stables situation, because he was like sort of the older one at the time. They mentioned that the dire and fucked up situation that like to survive the breeding rotation, they've had to kill younger members in the rotation to make sure that like they stay alive for longer, which apparently is also not uncommon within the system, which is also like not like one of those few times of like, yeah, that's one of those things that just kind of happens, is that like fascism becomes self-perpetuating after a point. Like after a point, like the slaves kill each other and you don't even have to do it. Like, but I don't think that was the point they were going for here. Oh boy. Oh man. We're getting more character assassination today. They get caught by BJ, Daisy, and Marmalade, and BJ like bleats out the like general cop, you have the right to remain silent, bullshit. 21 gets mad at her, like takes a swing at her. BJ panics when she thinks 20 is going to join in, and she accidentally beats him to death. With the teep ending with a sobbing 21 begging for death from a disinterested BJ who claims that he just has typical male hysteria, which is a callback, like, which is an allusion to like the notion of like women back in the day used to get like prescribed hysteria as like a physical illness, which was that they weren't having enough sex. So that's a cool thing to add into your story, Somber. BJ explains that she panicked, which is some fucking rookie cop shit. Like the notion of like, oh, these minorities are coming at me, and I just had to shoot them 47 times. I just had to unload my entire clip into their body. I don't know what happens. It's like, fuck. Like she actually just went full Rodney King on him. Like, I can't believe that this happened. I can't believe that this is in the story. I don't understand how Somber expects us to be forgiven, like to forgive BJ ever for this action in this story. She
probably because thin blue line, like probably because yeah. we're meant to immediately like intuitively empathize with like the incredible cowardice of cops and their inability to like approach a situation from a distance and get like scope a situation rather than like stand right next to it so they can be justified into panicking their entire like clip into a civilian. Probably because like given the overall politics expressed so far, Somber thinks it is just fine. Like there's nothing to forgive. This is a totally legitimate action on the part of a police officer.
Yeah, it's a complicated situation of disavowal, right? Like it's the thing where the story presents it as it's a negative thing, but it's a personally bad thing. Like it was a personal mistake she made and not like in any way a condemnation of the system because she panicked. She made a mistake, but like overarchingly the security was fine is a thing. Even though all the other named members of the security force outside of Gin Rummy are syndivantic psychotic monsters who are barely restrained assholes. Like the worst part about this is that reading this over, like I was so accosted by like the mental psychic like assault, because it's very visceral of like of a cop being incapable of stopping to beat them to death because their adrenaline is running so high. And like, how is this our protagonist? Like everything else that we know about this character that we ever see establishes that she's inherent, like she may make mistakes, but she's intrinsically kind of a good person. Like she makes good value and moral judgments. But like, how is that true? Like how is this character anything besides like an amoral thug? Like there's a whole thing that makes a point about this in later parts of the story that like the line that she stands against is that she could have been an amoral monster in the ways, but chooses not to be, which implies the justification that because she's doing things for the right moral reason, that she's justified in any level of means that she chooses to act on them. Because the story constantly forgives her for the atrocities, except for the notion of making her feel sad about the actions of doing them. So, like, what the fuck am I supposed to think about this? You know? Like, what are you supposed to think from the perspective of a reader? Are you supposed to agree with her, or are you supposed to, like, condemn her? Because it's not framed like you're supposed to.
No. Like, so, a thing that we've discussed on and off of this podcast is how it's very much a ends justify the means. Even if the ends are awful, like, it's the disavowal is, oh, but I had to. Like, you can do anything if you... You know, I, at the time, I just felt like I had to. The entire moral ethos of someone like Somber would seem to be, and this is a metaphor that I've used off the podcast, so I'm going to introduce it to you, dear listener. Be very careful of the person who effectively says constantly, You can't morally judge me for killing those children and harvesting their organs for profit. You don't know that I had malice in my heart when I did that. How dare you assume my motives in killing those children and selling their organs for profit? As far as you know, I had the best of intentions when I killed those children and sold their organs for profit. It's the ultimate dodge. I think maybe you can make an argument that, like, Protestant Christianity has a hand in it. The notion of, like, infinite, like, redemption, like, that you can just say you're sorry, and
yeah,
as long as you're a person in a position of power,
yeah, as long as I apologize to God, I'm fine. Yeah.
Like, do you have to, like, pay any recompense to your victims? No, I apologize to God. My victims want recompense, they'd better take it. And by that I mean, they'd better not, because then that's an act of violence against my person. They're trying to steal from me then. No, it's, it comes back to, like, there's no mystery here. We already covered it with Blue Lives Matter. It's,
Yeah, I've just been trying to wrap my brain around it for the last couple of weeks of, like, what am I even supposed to think about this? Like, what are you trying to say? And, like, what is the text trying to say? And I don't think it's anything good.
The horror is that you already know. The terror, yeah, is that it was always in your face. It's just Randian sociopathy. Like, there's no mystery to it. If only there was some conspiracy, if only there was some hidden message, but the text says what it does.
Well, we got like a whole more 50 chapters of this to go. So strap in, folks. We're going to be talking a lot about this kind of stuff. Anyways, I guess I should just carry on for the rest of the chapter, but I'm pretty burnt by this point. Anyways, we get a proper description of Flank itself. It's kind of like a mirage of hedonism kind of town. It's everything's made of neon and lights, and it's all strung together in a kind of cool apocalyptic town setting that's all runs as a sexton kind of thing. We get some descriptions of places, but I don't care to bother even explaining them. Everyone decides to break and figure out what they're going to do for today. With BJ deciding she's going to cash in the contracts at the Finders headquarters that's in the town, which is in a building called Stable 69.
Cool.
Yes.
This is where children live.
No. There are no children in this town.
Oh, but she's catching this in the Crusaders, like...
No, checkpoint. No, Finders. Finders.
Finders.
Finders are money.
And, gotcha.
Yeah. But yeah, she's cashing it at Stable 69, which... when she goes in, it's revealed that Stable 69 was actually Stable 89, and they just painted over the sign because, like, they wanted to, like... yeah.
It seems to be a hobby in this town.
Yeah.
They painted it over to make it dumber.
and hornier, yeah. Which, I mean, mood, but, like, don't have time to go into that. But, yeah, we get a description of the inside of it. It's basically, like, it's a... it's a myriad of every cliche of every sex stand you could ever possibly imagine in any like procedural crime thriller mushed together. We get a kind of anticlimactic thing where she like
somber world traveled sex haver, I'm sure is like very familiar with. Yeah.
Total sex haver. She gets a little bit of a I put the line time for Bichi to get fucked. We have a little bit of a scene. I'm just laughing at my own jokes. Don't mind me.
I don't. I appreciate you. should we all.
The stable's like broken down into like three different sections, and like the finder section is like closed because apparently Caprice is out of town and will be back later. So that's kind of a bust, and we won't see her again for another chapter. So that's cool. So instead, BJ's like, well, if I'm not gonna be able to do any business, let's go have some fun. So she goes to the fun section and has a chat with a chatty bar pony. She's like the cliche of like the exposition horse pony. They have a small conversation about the nature of hedonism and its role in a post-apocalyptic setting. Like everything is so bad, why not just get fucked and do drugs and whatever, like time is short. Which I mean, to a certain degree, I can almost kind of relate to. Like if you're in a horrible post-apocalyptic wasteland where everything's dying and like there's no hope, like I don't know, might as well just like wear some kinky outfits and get fucked for a day or whatever. But BJ points out the consequences of this hedonism is addict, like addiction and people being strung out for all their money.
Moral and cultural degeneracy.
Yeah.
You should be a virtuous person like I am and just
while you were having unmarital sex, I was studying the blade. Both tripping over each other's jokes here. I'm gonna cut that part, don't worry about it. But anyways,
the wasteland needs purity.
Yeah.
And it's the penis is evil. The penis shoots seeds.
The gun is good. The penis is bad. It's just turning into Zardoz every day.
Yep.
Slowly, every episode, this becomes more and more Zardoz. But yeah, the bar horse concedes that maybe that part isn't so hot, like the drug dealer specifically, and gives BJ a hot tip. Some of the major drug dealers and drug manufacturers in the area, so they can maybe do something about it. This section could be entirely omitted. They fight in a fireworks factory. They fight a Hydra. Rampage gets eaten by said Hydra. The factory gets blown up. Rampage is somehow okay. It's a pointless distraction, but it's kind of a fun one. Like it's at least like
wait. So they go attack a drug manufacturer.
Yes, inside
of a fireworks
factory.
Is what happens? Is that what happens? We have a discussion of like the soul crushing despair, and the only thing that people have left to turn to is like hedonism, and the response to this, the like the bartender of all people says, well, if you have a problem about it, enforce prohibition by blood and destruction. go cut off people's only like lifeline.
Yes.
How about that? Like, force them to,
yeah, and frame it as a good thing, because like after they do that, like the schlub of a doctor that works at the medical center that does all the detox for people is like, well, I have a bunch more customers, which I mean, I guess like she's making a tidy profit off of the detox, the new detox economy that just sprung up.
Yeah, so much for fucking libertarian freedom. There's so much for libertarian free will. Like, we've got an ubermensch here who like declares prohibition in the town. Deal with it, parasites.
Oh, you're gonna oppose me? Well, I blow up your only drug operation. Suck it. BJ gets blasted in the explosion and has to be set up in the auto dock again. She has a chat
Good.
With. She has a you want bad things to happen to BJ now, and I totally am on board.
I mean, so does the author. Like, I'm like, yeah. who am I to defy the content creator? Like, his intended emotional experience
is good. You suffer there, BJ. She's rewarded by taking out the place, but by having a getting a permanent place to stay in the hotel, one of the hotels that the city is built up on. So she decides to rest up there from all the action. Yay, more memory orbs! We get to go through another memory orb. I'm so excited to.
Was it under her pillow? Like, what?
No, she just had two of them on her that, like, from a previous scene that she hasn't gone through yet.
You know what? Again, no. I'm gonna defy the text. You misread it. She like she was gonna like finally like take a long, in her mind, well deserved rest, de-stress. Head hits the pillow, ponk, memory orb.
Ponk, memory orb.
They're everywhere. Like, they're, like...
We're up to our eyeballs in memory orbs. But yeah, we get a... It's a long scene, but I can omit basically all of it, which is always my favorite part of this story when I can just ignore it, where it's the first time Big Mac and the girl he's sweet on ever met in Hoofington, which is mostly just an excuse to explain, like, the city's being rebuilt. There's a great line that has a lot of worrying implications, that everyone is welcome, as long as you're not a zebra. So it's a town of multiculturalism, except for zebras.
Oh. Right.
Yeah, no. We have to have standards in Goose Stepsburg.
Like, what's the point of having a nation without strong borders?
Look, it's not racist. We have just a very strong merit-based criteria for immigration into Goose Stepsburg.
And zebras just happen to not meet that criteria. Isn't that a fun coincidence? And there's a great bit where, like, Mariponi, the horse, she's like, well, the zebras didn't even do anything wrong, and it's not, like, because they're talking specifically about the fire that happened in the city, and it's just blamed on zebras, but there's no evidence that zebras did it. And everyone around her gives her dirty looks. Because apparently Gustavsburg is, in fact, the most racist town ever that has ever existed in anywhere.
I'm sure it'll turn out that everybody else in that scene, they're just realists glaring at the lunatic, at the cultural Marxist who's
audacious nonsense that is racial harmony and understanding. We get a little bit about Sand Dogs, which I really just don't have time to talk about. Long story short, we're going to have a long discussion about how this story decided to include a, like, Native American Trail of Tears moment in the story, and how, like, that's fucked up and unforgivable, but that's not for a couple of chapters from here. But yeah, and then we get to the end of this chapter, my favorite part.
Oh boy. Your favorite part. Sorry. Hit me. Yeah,
the end of the chapter.
Tightening my guts.
Yeah, like you're ready? You're ready?
Yeah.
Are you ready? So BJ wakes up to reflect on all that she's seen in the memory orb, when she notices she has a bomb collar around her neck, and when she looks up, she sees U-21 and P-21 sitting over top of her, like standing in the other side of the room, menacing her, and 21 kind of makes an ominous, like, hey, Blackjack, you miss me? And that's the end of the chapter, which is actually a pretty good way of ending a chapter, finally. It isn't just a limp dick, like, oh, and then she went unconscious. Like,
I mean, it would be a pretty solid cliffhanger if there were any emotional investment in the protagonist. Like, unfortunately, it is limp by context. Like, oh no, oh no, something bad might happen to this person. Wouldn't want that to happen.
I don't know. I still have to. By requirement to get through this story, I have to stay positive about the character, even though she's a monster. Like, I can't read this story if I don't go like, oh yeah, that stuff just stupid and didn't happen.
Yeah.
Because it's such bad character assassination that, like, it's impossible to think that this character is a good person. So the only way you can carry on with the rest of the story is just kind of like to forget that it happened, which is kind of what happened with me. Like, oh yeah, it's like a sad thing, like it's a fucked up thing that happened, but like everyone gets over it really easily. I don't know, like, fuck it, I guess I'll just never remember this part. It's the only thing that makes BJ, like, likable.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll meditate on that over the next week.
Hey, you're totally valid and to hate this character forever, and like definitely, you totally should. It's just that, like,
no, we're already setting a precedent of, like, defiance of the, like, just sheer
defiance of the text. No,
this
Sombra,
is a fixed
you fit. Can't decide what movie I'm reading. you can't. Like, no, author's dead. Like, you I'll read the text however the hell I want. this podcast is officially a fan fiction of a fan fiction of a fan fiction. Yes. Not even a fan fiction, a hate fiction. A spite fiction. An enemy fiction of a fan fiction of a fan fiction.
Yes. That's our new title. We are now a hate fic of a fanfic of a fanfic that in itself is a synthesis of a yada 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 yada. So that's the end of our chapters. We're almost done this volume where we get to reflect on all we've seen so far.
God, it's a rough one today.
Yeah, it has been.
Rough weather out there. Yeah. Rough weather out there on the podcast seas, I tell you. We tried to cast the pod, but my God, it was the perfect storm.
Storm's blowing in. Yeah, so I guess we should probably plug our...
The author had doll's eyes.
We should probably plug our various stuff. Rate us, review us, and like us.
Yeah, click all the stars. Click all the thumbs up. Press bell icons. Press subscribe buttons. All the buttons. Press the good ones. Press the positive, happy buttons. Increase our profile in the various algorithms, and leave us a review. It's the easiest thing in the world. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, so we can improve the product. Tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell complete strangers. Like tell the lady at the checkout when you're getting groceries. It'll really confuse her. It'll be a nice cathartic performance art experience for both of you. Thank you for coming. Thank you for bearing with us. Thank you for bearing witness. You are all witness to a great becoming. And I have firmly coming to the decision that this has very distinctly been all a terrible mistake.